Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everybody. It's Sunday. That means it's the main course. I'm Patrick Martins, your host. We're broadcasting live out of Roberta's Restaurant, 261 Moore Street, Bushwick, Brooklyn. Morgan, stop on the L train. Come here. Is there anyone who has not been here? Joe, is there anyone in the world who has not been here?
I think everybody in New York City has made the trek out here.
That's good. That's good. I did. I was at the James Beard Award. They had me speaking at this... event they did to honor Wendell Berry, and some lady was like, so what have you been up to? I'm like, oh, you know, she's like, have you been doing anything since you left Slow Food? I'm like, well, you know, yeah, a little bit. For instance, have you ever been to Roberta's? And she's like, no. I was like, so let's change that. What have you been doing since I left Slow Food? Good Lord, you've never heard about Roberta's? Anyway, how are you doing, Joe? Did you have a good week?
I had a pretty good week.
Can't complain. What were the highlights? What was your favorite show this week?
Favorite show this week.
Most inspiring, innovative.
Innovative show.
Interesting.
I'm going to say that I really liked Helen Holliman's Radio on Ice show from last Thursday.
Was she really on ice during that show?
There was, I don't know if I can reveal the secrets of the show, but it was Radio on Ice. It was Jen Pelka and Emily from Gastronomista blog, and they were just talking about you know, how to host for the holidays coming up. So it was pretty good. Hour-long special.
Excellent, excellent. We're about to have a very interesting talk with a friend of mine, Ed Kaufman. And, you know, before we get into that, I just want to talk. I thought, I don't know if you, did you watch Saturday Night Live last night, Joe?
I did not.
Well, Paul McCartney was the musical guest, so that's big. Martin Short was the host, and man, he is funny. He was back in the Billy Crystal days. And all those guys from, you know, Waiting for Guffman, all those kind of like comedian guys back in the 80s. And man, Martin Short was funny, and all the stars came out to see him. Samuel L. Jackson, Kristen Wiig, Alec Baldwin did a skit with him, Tina Fey. You know, there were all these people that kind of came out because he's like kind of the old school humor and, you know, very outrageous and irreverent and super funny. Anyway, Saturday Night Live had a great vigil at the beginning, you know, because I was watching the news and they were talking about the school shooting, you know, and it was so sad. I mean, these reporters were all like with tears in their eyes for the full half hour. I mean, especially the ones that were out there on site. And, you know, I was just like, God, now what are we going to all of a sudden laugh? And, you know, are they just going to jump into this comedic hour, you know, after all this had just been talked about minutes before on the news? And they had a very touching moment where, you know, the first shot of SNL was a candle, and it panned out to a choir of maybe 20, 30 kids singing Silent Night. You know, and talking about resting in heavenly peace. And, you know, it was a very touching homage to what happened. And, you know, I kind of appreciated Lorne Michaels and Saturday Night Live for dealing with that issue in a kind of what I thought to be elegant way, a serious way. You know, and now Obama goes and speaks to all these families this afternoon. And, you know, I hope he mans up and basically says that, you know, the National Rifle Association has to come to the table for some compromise. You know, I think hunters' rights should be protected, this and that, but good Lord, the NRA is not untouchable. You know, if our unions aren't untouchable, if, you know, 401ks, you know, all this investment, everything is open for discussion. And, you know, granted the second or whatever amendment protects the right to hold firearms, but there needs to be some statement made. If not, this means nothing. I mean, the killer killed himself. The mother's dead. I mean, there's like no one to blame. The only good that can come of this is some type of action. So hopefully Obama, you know, mans up and says what he should say, which is that, you know, gun rights need to be protected. It's not some slippery slope where eventually guns are going to become banned. But at the same time, some statement has to be made. So I know everyone's like, what the hell is Patrick talking about politics for? Good Lord, he barely knows anything about food, and he's using his platform to talk about the NRA. But anyway, it is overstepping my bounds, but something that, you know, I feel strongly about. Well, let's take a very, very short break, and we're going to come back with Ed Kaufman and really get into coffee in a way that it hasn't really been tackled before recently on the station. So stay with us. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
You're listening to Baldy by Huntronic on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
God, I love Brian Kenny. What a great intro. Well, welcome, Ed. Thanks so much for coming on to the show this morning.
Thanks, Patrick.
Ed Kaufman. Well, let's tell our listeners, what do you do?
Well, I am my job title is the director of roasting for Joe in New York, but as I'm sure you can imagine, it definitely encompasses a wide range of tasks, of all the way from fixing broken espresso machines to cranking out chai lattes, all the way to roasting all of the Joe roasted coffee and sourcing green.
Hmm. Well, tell us exactly. I mean, what is that director of roasting? That is a very progressive new title in the food world, right? It's almost like a cheese cave manager, and you know, this whole new forager back a decade ago. I mean, what is its mandate?
Well, at the level. At the output we're roasting right now, I oversee purchasing of green coffee. We select the coffees that we're going to purchase, and then, you know, just develop the correct roast profile, do all the quality control and education stuff. So, and also making sure we have plenty of bags to put the coffee in. All sorts of different things are involved in that whole program.
Just before we move on, just give us a brief summary. I mean, we're going to cover this later, but roasting. So you take raw coffee beans and put them in a big machine that roasts it, and you know when to take it off of the machine. I mean,
yeah,
just tell our listeners who don't know exactly what that means.
Okay, I'll give you the short version. It's coffee comes in big burlap sacks a lot of times, and it's just basically green seed. So we put it in this big machine that I like to compare to if a pizza oven and a clothes dryer had a baby, it would be a coffee roaster. So then, you know, put it through a series of chemical reactions and pull it out when it's the right color of brown.
Very interesting. And how long does that process take for the average cup of Joe?
Usually between 12 and 15 minutes, depending on what you're going for.
And if you cook it too long, you ruin it.
Yeah.
Can you stock, undercook it, taste it, and then cook it more? Or once you take it out, is it done?
It's done.
Interesting. It's so done. You only get one chance.
Exactly.
Very interesting. So what makes a good cup of coffee?
Well, I think, you know, working barista shifts now, I really, in addition to roasting, I'm really at the front lines of where this is supposed to, where this all happens. Without selling cups of coffee and little shots of espresso all day long, it really, none of the rest of that stuff really matters. It doesn't matter if I roast perfect coffee if I can't sell it. The most important thing is to enjoy your cup of coffee. You know, there are a lot of things out there right now that you can do to make your coffee taste better, which I think we're going to get into later. But it's important that it's fun and that you enjoy it and that you can kind of take a moment and appreciate what's in your cup and what it does for you each day. And you know, if you're going to share it with somebody, you know, appreciate that you're in a situation where you're sharing it with someone. I always compare it to, you know, sitting at a sidewalk cafe in Paris drinking an awful cappuccino.
It's still good
because you're sitting in Paris, you know. It's none of the roast dates, the extraction, over under extraction, the too hot milk, you know, none of that matters as much as enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. And certainly caffeine is a big part of that because it helps give you a little boost anyway.
Definitely.
There are different levels of caffeine for different beans.
Yeah, I mean, across the higher quality coffees, they're a little more consistent. But from, you know, if you're going from some lower quality Robusta coffees, which are, you know, like Folgers, Maxwell House, things like that, they have way more caffeine in them.
The lower ones do.
Yeah, lower quality have a little more caffeine.
Is there a number or rating system that you use for caffeine percentage? Like, is it a 10 out of 100 or a 6 out of 9? Or, I mean, how is caffeine levels rated? Or is there not really that number?
There's not really like an index like that, but it's more, you know, for a 12-ounce cup of coffee, you get this many milligrams of caffeine. And, you know, roast level affects that. Different varieties within the Arabica family have different levels of caffeine.
So now, you know, I know some cup of coffees are good to me personally. And, you know, it is important that I enjoy it. But oftentimes I just need a cup of coffee in the morning to get me going.
Yeah.
Where would you put the onus? Like, what is the percentage of responsibility between the raw ingredient in the farms, your roasting, the barista, and the machine? Is it 25% each person, or does it all come down to the barista much in the same way it all comes down to the slaughterhouse? No matter what the farmer does, it's that hourglass. All animals are killed. If they screw up, it's all gone. Or, yeah, where does the responsibility lie mostly for a good cup of coffee? How would you divide out the responsibility?
It's tough to divide it out. I kind of want to say that each one has 100% responsibility in all the way from soil content to varieties of coffee, all the way to pruning practices and then harvesting, processing, getting the seeds out of the fruit, shipping, storage of the green coffee.
Is that important? The temperature at which it's shipped, is that important?
Everything, yeah. And when it comes down to it, it's amazing that we're actually able to get anything that tastes worth a damn. If you think about all the opportunities that the coffee has to be messed up, from there, roasting. If a snowflake falls in Chicago and I'm trying to get green coffee from California, it might sit on a truck in 30 degree weather for a week, which will affect the flavor. Packaging of the roasted coffee, the machines, and even, you know, a dirty cup. All the way, it's made it all that way, and then you serve it in a dirty cup. It's kind of ruins the journey in a way. So when you do get a really nice cup of coffee, it's pretty special. It's been through a long journey.
So it's like hands across the planet Earth, really.
Exactly.
It really all needs to happen.
Exactly.
So when did New York become such a good coffee city? I mean, can you talk a little bit about the history? Because we always joke on this show, we're observant of the fact that food was quite bad in this city in the 60s and 70s. And it was only in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s that all of a sudden cheese guys came. Steve Jenkins, coffee guys, I don't know if that's the same with coffee, but olive oil and San Marzano tomatoes. This is a very recent phenomenon.
Yeah.
We talk about locavores now, but I mean, in the 70s, there wasn't even imported, you know? So tell us a little bit about New York City coffee.
Well, it's kind of funny because historically New York, like way back in history, New York was the coffee capital of at least the U.S., maybe not the world, but, you know, just importing and exporting, a huge hub for that trade. But I would say up maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little more, there are a few shops that really started doing a great job with pulling great shots of espresso, paying attention to roast dates, roasted coffee freshness, And really amazing drink preparation, whether it be, you know, lattes, cappuccinos, or just black coffee, and just making sure every step of that process was definitely done properly to make really delicious coffee. And I would, places like 9th Street Espresso and Joe, those were some of the first coffee shops in New York City that really started pushing it. And then Grumpy and Gimme came along, and then from there, it kind of, you know, started a little bit of a revolution. And in the last, I've been here for about 6.5 years working in the coffee industry, and it's been amazing to see how quickly it's moved and how quickly people of New York have embraced this kind of newer movement. And on the industry side, of course, we've made our adjustments of how to communicate the importance of delicious coffee and, you know, how we're something a little different than your neighborhood bodega.
Well, I mean, yeah, that brings up a lot of issues. I mean, interesting issues. So it wasn't Starbucks, right? Something was happening here before the arrival of Starbucks. I mean, I know that kind of brought it to the masses, but where were there like Italian restaurants? Or you say this 9th Street Espresso and Joe. Did they develop relationships with African nations and start importing the stuff themselves by boat? Or like, who was at the center of this? How did it work? Who reached out to who? Who was responsible?
Yeah, well, they both companies were using roasters. They were sourcing their coffee from roasteries that were doing that. They were, you know, buying coffee responsibly, buying higher quality stuff, and you know, they were really able to focus on the retail side of things while they believed in the practices of the people they bought their beans from. The other part of that question, the Starbucks side, I feel like Starbucks really paved the way for, you know, education about that there are different coffees out there besides just a black or a light and sweet or, you know, regular coffee. you know, there are lattes, cappuccinos, different origins, and also Starbucks charged accordingly for their beverages and really kind of woke people up to the fact that the cheapest cup of coffee isn't always the best cup of coffee.
Well, let's talk about that. The deli cup, the famous blue cup, which is now, you know, in the 100 most important art pieces in history or in America. You know, you see the little famous coffee shop blue cup.
Yep.
Is that a bad cup of coffee or is that a good cup of coffee?
Well, some of the better coffee shops now are selling ceramic versions of that cup.
Oh yeah, exactly.
So you can get a good cup of coffee in that specific
but like
cup.
If I go around the corner here, yeah, to the bodega, can a $1 coffee be good? Or it has to be the $4 or $5 cup before you start to get into high quality?
Well, I don't want to speak too negatively or, you know, poo-poo on people's practices of coffee brewing, but a lot of times those places get pre-ground packets that may have been roasted a year ago.
I see. Wow, a year ago.
I mean, those are two things right there that really contribute to freshness. It might have started out as great coffee when it was first roasted and sourced, but you know, within 30 seconds of grinding beans, you start losing character.
Wow, 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
So what's the ideal time for a realistic time for someone like, you know, Joe? Like, what standard do you keep yourself up to?
We grind everything right before we make it. So everything comes in whole bean. Mm-hmm. And then as far as freshness after roasting, usually you want to use it within 2 to 3 weeks after it's roasted.
So you tell that to your stores that you'll sell it to, hey, after 3 or 4 weeks you should be contacting us and getting another shipment.
Yeah, definitely. And right now we're only roasting for our retail stores, and they're all educated and they know to use it to, you know, order enough to where they'll get through it each week. Mm-hmm. And then we deliver once a week. But
so is there what U.S. city was the first big coffee city? I mean, it was New York, and I mean, are there others?
Well, back in the day, yeah. New York was huge. It was just such a trade hub that it ended up being a pretty... There were some major companies here that did some big work for coffee as a whole. Mm-hmm. Back in the 1800s. But as far as the current movement and what we're doing with specialty coffee and you know, paying attention to origin and roasts and freshness of beans and drink preparation. I think Seattle's probably, we got a shout out to Seattle. They've had specialty roaster retailers out there for a long time, a lot longer than in New York. And
interesting.
You know, they kind of paved the way. I mean, Starbucks being from there, they paved the way for really awesome coffee to become kind of a regular thing.
So tell me, five places you would go to for a delicious drink. I mean, really anywhere in the world, or you know, or who just in New York, especially who is really known to make the best coffee. I mean, you personally. I mean, I know opinions differ on these types of questions, but just as an expert, it'd be interesting to know where you would go out of your way to taste.
Yeah. So if I were going to go on a cafe crawl right now after this show.
Mm-hmm.
Where
with President Obama and Michelle Obama.
Well, I don't know what kind of coffee he likes, but or they like, but I could probably show him some good shots. You know, the Joe Pro Shop, I got a shout out to him, even if I didn't work for that company. You can go in and you can order one of five different coffees, and they'll brew it to order. You can order by region or by farm, or it's pretty special. It's almost like a wine list.
Interesting.
A few companies are starting to do that more. Cafe Grumpy, I'd probably go there because they kind of do a similar thing. And they've been doing that since almost the beginning, you know, brewing a single cup of coffee at a time.
So does that mean it takes 5 minutes? Like when I go to the Ferry Plaza in San Francisco and I wait a half hour for a cup of coffee? I mean, does that mean it comes in the drip bag and it drips into the cup and then you get the cup?
Yep.
Okay, so that is the best way of doing it, huh?
Brewed to order is
what you want.
The best way. Yeah, I mean, because after it sits for a while, it starts releasing different acid compounds, start breaking down, and you get some bitters bad flavors. So
Grumpy Coffee, Joe.
I would go to Stumptown. I can always get a really good shot of Hairbender there.
Okay.
So Grumpy Joe.
Where are they, in Red Hook?
No, they're in the lobby of the Ace Hotel on 29th and Broadway.
Right next to the Breslin.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. I would go to Third Rail because they are just doing a fabulous job of, you know, they're a great neighborhood shop. They do a really good job of communicating to their customers, and they're, you know, very aware of freshness and variety, and they're really talented.
This is interesting. This is a good top five. I didn't know if you would just spew them out or be like, oh, I can't say. There's so many, but this is a great list. So what's number five? Which one also makes it in?
Oh, number five. I would go, I have to say that Variety in Brooklyn is a great coffee shop too.
Oh, cool.
They're super geeky there, but you know, they're not geeky and being elitist. They're geeky with making sure they take good care of their customers.
Got it.
Yeah, and I want, there are many more, and I apologize to anybody out there that didn't show up.
No, that's good. That's good. For the full list, go to Ed's website. No, but now, are these coffee places competing for at the source? I mean, is there a limited supply of delicious coffee, or is there enough plenty to go around?
Well, It's interesting because for the first time, you know, it's kind of a new phenomenon that news of delicious coffee is coming backwards from the cafe to the producer. And there's never been so much communication between baristas and coffee farmers as there is now. And it's making a lot of difference. And, you know, everyone in that chain from barista to farmer is pulling for higher quality at the same time. So it's really, excuse me, more coffee is becoming more delicious with the higher demand. So supply and demand are kind of going up simultaneously. I don't know about the rates. I mean, there might be different rates, but so to answer your question, I think sometimes for the bigger names in producer, you know, the bigger names of producers that are doing a really good job, people are kind of all clawing at trying to get the best beans from them. But at the same time, you can also help a producer develop quality.
Sure, sure. And is that what Joe does? I mean, work directly with people and explain to them how they need to be pruning or selecting or not picking all the beans and going out there and flying to third world countries and talking with these people?
Joe's not doing that yet. We started roasting in August.
Oh, wow.
So
since you started working there.
Yeah. Since
nice.
But, you know, eventually we'll work towards relationships where we would kind of where we would make suggestions if needed. But right now we have our buying practices include, you know, we want to make sure that we purchase our coffee through a fair and traceable transaction, mm-hmm. which is what I like to call it. And every link in the supply chain is important when we're working on these transparent, traceable transactions. So you have the producer, sometimes a broker, exporter, importer, and me, you know, and the links are not very many, and we have relationships with all of them. So that's right now we're buying through people that do make suggestions for improving quality on mm-hmm. the producer level, but none of us are going there yet.
Got it. So what are things that people need to know about making a good cup of coffee at home? I mean, simple things that people could do to improve their home coffee life.
Yeah, well, it's a couple simple things, just clean equipment, you know, making sure you have a clean grinder and a clean brewer.
Why? Because if it's old coffee, then it'll affect the taste.
Yeah, coffee's such a... It absorbs any flavors, any smells in the air. The oils in the coffee oxidize and become rancid. And then the next coffee you put through your grinder is going to pick up those flavors. So clean equipment, grinding it right before you brew it, and making sure that the coffee wasn't roasted more than, you know, say a month ago. I know that there are some people debate on whether it's 3 months or 2 weeks or, but if it's sealed and stored properly, which is something else we should talk about too, you know, you'll get a really good, vibrant cup of coffee after a month. Mm-hmm. And so you should never store it in the refrigerator or the freezer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. Always leave it out.
Airtight container, room temperature.
Always put it back in an airtight container.
Yeah. Yeah. And light proof. You don't want sunshine to hit it either.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That'll mess it up, huh?
That'll mess it up.
You don't want photosynthesis going on there.
That's another part of the bean's life.
Yeah, exactly.
Painful memories.
You don't want to revisit sunlight for the bean. So now tell me about temperature. You know, I always am disappointed when I go to a coffee place or someone's home and the coffee comes warm or room temperature. How can you control temperature and how important is that to the gastronomic quality of the coffee?
Well, the ideal brewing temperature of coffee is between 195 and 205 is okay. Kind of the general rule.
Right below boiling.
Yeah, yeah. You never want to pour boiling water on coffee because that'll burn it.
Hmm. So then, right before it starts to bubble.
I usually bubble it and then let it sit for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of the kind of cheaper coffee brewers like Mr. Coffee and Krups, you know, they don't get the water hot enough, so you end up with some sour compounds. Since those brew it out at lower temperatures, all the good sweetness and body are kind of left in the filter. On the other hand, if it's too hot, if it's boiling, you're going to take all that stuff and too many bitter compounds out. So it'll cancel out all the beautiful things about the cup that you'd want to get out. So you can do, you know, manual brew method. You can do a Chemex where you can control the water temperature. Or you can get a Technivorm, which is a brewer, you know, basically a push-button brewer, but it actually gets the water hot enough. But it definitely affects it, yeah.
So now talk about the vocabulary you would use at a restaurant. Now, I know your opinion if you're having fun and if you enjoy the taste, but, you know, I've personally never bought into that. I'm like, I want experts to tell me if this is good because I want to understand why I'm different.
Yeah.
Than the majority of people who've tasted 200 million cups of coffee when I've only tasted 30.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so what would you say, what do you look for? How would you describe a great cup of coffee at a restaurant in terms of, I hate to use this word, but like mouth, feel, and all that? What traits are you looking for? How could someone know if you, for instance, would love the cup of coffee after having tasted so many?
Yeah, that's a really good question because... You know, if I'm clocked in, that's all I think about is, you know, mouthfeel, acidity, sweetness. Is it clean? How's the, you know, how's the balance?
Is it supposed to be bitter?
I mean, bitter is a contributing flavor, but we want it to be a good kind of bitter. Say like bitters in a nice cocktail. Mm-hmm. You know, it shouldn't attack your mouth with bitter or astringent flavors. So, I mean, the same principles apply to a restaurant. And the difficulty in a restaurant, especially with espresso, is that if you let the machine sit for a while and don't use it, or if coffee's ground already, then you're going to get a bad shot. And a shot is, you know, the base of a cappuccino or a latte, mm-hmm. or just an espresso shot alone. And you're going to pick up those flavors that we were talking about before, where the coffee's oxidized or maybe they have dirty equipment. It's just hard to maintain that. And it's so often not a focus of a restaurant, you know, which is becoming better. But at the same time, if you just had an awesome meal and the best dessert you've ever had, and you're sitting there smiling with your full belly and you want a shot of espresso to mm-hmm. warm you up on your walk to the train or whatever, and it's the worst tasting thing in the world, it makes your whole meal awful, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So that's really a big push for the industry right now, is let's send these people out after having a great meal with a great shot. So people, you know, restaurants are really starting to pay attention to that. I know 11 Madison Park does a really lovely Chemex service where they brew it for you right at your table, which is amazing. I mean, I think it's $11, but for a cup of coffee or two, but it's still, what a great demonstration and what a great experience all around. And it tastes amazing.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's an expensive cup of coffee.
Yeah,
but I mean, like we were just talking about in the car ride over, I mean, you know, you could conceivably just be getting ripped off by somebody, but most of the time, I mean, you want to trust people. You're actually paying for a quality difference, and that costs money. And you know, we shouldn't pretend that quality difference doesn't exist.
Exactly.
And we also shouldn't pretend that people who have difficulty paying $11 wouldn't also appreciate it.
Definitely.
You know,
definitely.
Quality is a truth.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, it comes down to, when we're buying our green coffee, when we're selecting it off of a table, you know, a tasting table of 15 different coffees, and we find one that we really like, we think about, how are the customers going to like this? How's my mother going to like this? You know, if she doesn't have to think about it too much, if it's just something special about it, you can't put your finger on, and you don't have a refined palate, that's totally fine. You know, it should be good. It shouldn't be offensive to your mouth. But along the way, you know, the costs that are incurred are extra care and harvesting. You got to pay people more to harvest more carefully and maybe do multiple harvests. Mm-hmm. You can't just put the coffee through a roaster and roast it in 6 minutes and get twice the output, because it doesn't develop properly in 6 minutes. You need to roast it in a slower time frame. Mm-hmm. So those things, you know, those are a few things that incur more costs, and we have to, in order to
respect
to stay business.
Yeah,
we have to.
So this is one of my favorite times that when we get to do this. It's free association. So you're allowed one sound for each word I say. No, just kidding. One sentence, couple sentences. You know, just the first things that come to mind. No right or wrong, because obviously two sentences or one sentence or a word is not enough. But let's start. I'm going to give you one, okay, two, three, four, five words in the coffee world, and you tell me what you think about them. We'll start off, Joe.
Community. Delicious.
I like it. All right. Wow, you're doing good. Dallas Brothers.
Tried and true and successful. Delicious.
Okay, good, good. Now, let's see if the delicious falls with this one, too. I'd be interested if it does. Juan Valdez.
Colombia. Thank you. But see you later.
Good, good. God, it's as if you knew these were coming. Starbucks.
Thank you. See you later.
Oh, man.
No, just kidding.
No, that's right.
A little too dark for me. A little dark. But
just like Napa wines.
Paving the way.
People like, you know, too much.
Too much.
So they give you that punch, but it's not subtle or sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And I hear that. Stumptown.
Stumptown. Groundbreaking, delicious, great company.
Okay. Well, congratulations. I hear you are a finalist at the Good Food Awards, which is a friend of mine, Alice Waters, a very close friend of mine, Alice Waters, helped oversee a couple people, Sarah Wiener and a few people that started this very important food awards that is held each year at the Ferry Plaza. And various producers, whether they be in ham or cheese or jams and coffee, you know, they submit. What is a very stringent application, right? I mean, didn't they ask you a lot of questions about sourcing and making sure it was good, clean, and fair, not just good?
Yep.
So, you know, they do all that, and you are a finalist. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we're very excited.
You should be.
As I said, we started, our first roast date was August 2nd, and I think I sent off a sample to them. We just thought we'd try it out, you know, just being a brand new baby coffee roastery. And
what the hell?
Yeah, what
nothing
the hell?
To at least lose.
I knew the people that did all the tasting for the coffee section, and they're all very highly respected peers of mine, and kind of coffee heroes to me. And I thought, wow, you know, what an honor to have them just taste my coffee, maybe give me some feedback. But then we get a call, and it was from the Seedling Project, and they said, hey, you're final, or wait, you the coffee, they tasted everything blind and scored our coffee very high amongst many, many others, which is quite an honor. And then from there, that we filled out a questionnaire about sustainability, responsibly sourced coffee. And we bought the coffee through Coffee Shrub, which is a wonderful importer that has done tons of work in Ethiopia, where the coffee's from, Ethiopia, okay. Western Ethiopia, yeah. And I had so much information from them about the source of the coffee that I was able to really fill out that questionnaire in its entirety, and then that bumped us into finalist status. So
you were able to confirm the green, the direct trade, the kind of responsible sourcing other people wouldn't do. So who do you trust? Who is your big guy? I mean, when they really wanted to verify, if they wanted to verify and checked up on you, would they be calling the farm in Ethiopia, or would they be calling someone in Ethiopia, or a ship, a port guy? I mean, who backs up your claims? I mean, who do you trust to make sure that you are indeed getting the coffee? I mean, I take it it's a little bit you tasting it and being like, yes, but what else?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing, but, you know, just establishing relationships and trusting your importers to start is that's our plan, is to work through and develop relationships with importers we trust, moving towards producers and bringing those relationships to the producer. So that coffee came with all the information, you know, and it's attached to that lot as it's shipped. All the information is traceable the whole way through. So it made it really easy for me to fill that questionnaire.
When I used to call people for the Slow Food Awards before it became the Good Food Awards and all that, I always used to joke with my friend who would sit in the same room as me when we worked in Italy, and we would be like, Ed, we just want you to know we received your sample, and this award is really dedicated to the very best coffees, the very best people, the people who really know what they're doing, that are sourcing correctly. And we just wanted to call to say that you were not selected for the finalists. But we always used to joke, and we would always go, we're like, wait, is this real? Is he doing this on the phone and really not talking to anyone? And is this going to end with that? I'm like, no, this sounds real. And then sure enough, he would do it. I'm like, he fooled me again. But this is very, very interesting. Are there any websites or resources as we close out the interview that you would lead people to do more research about coffee, people who want to break into the industry, or is there an email or website that they could go to, you know, at all to learn more?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of resources out there. A good place to start is CoffeeGeek.com. That's good for home baristas and brewers, and you know, it's a discussion forum, so you can ask all the questions that you might be too scared to ask, or just, you know.
What about your wife? Doesn't she have a consultancy for coffee as well? Wife, you're a real powerhouse couple for coffee.
Yeah, my wife Nicole has she's got a service now called the Brew Doctor.
The Brew Doctor, get that, Joe. The Brew Doctor.
The Brew Doctor, and she's got a Facebook page, but I don't believe the website is quite up yet.
And people can bring her call her. She will come to your home and basically make you drink a lot better coffee.
Yeah, yeah, help you revamp your coffee program at home.
That is amazing. I mean, if you think about it, people drinking 2 cups a day, that's a big, important consultancy gig. I mean, she's really affecting something that is so close to people's lives and making it better. That's pretty cool.
And every, you know, everybody drinks it. The people that drink it every day, now, you know, you make that investment in her and then you're drinking great coffee for the rest,
of your life. You know? Exactly. Has it been going well for her? I mean, I've heard her go that she's been going on a couple of gigs and all that, goes to people's homes.
Yeah. So, yeah. We have a couple great references if people want to check them. Very, very satisfied customers.
Nicole's great. You know, Ann and I are big fans of hers, and we recommend it to anyone who would like to upgrade that side of their life, their morning routine.
Definitely.
So is decaf? Is decaf always bad?
No.
No? Okay.
No, not always bad.
Good. Well, listen, Ed, you've been very, very interesting. We should definitely have you on. I think, you know, we need more of a coffee presence on the network for sure. So I hope to be hearing more from you and your wife on the station. And thanks so much for giving up part of your Sunday to come out here.
Thanks, Patrick.
Joe.
Yes, Patrick?
Oh, you thought I was still talking about coffee, didn't you?
All right, good one.
Anyway, well, Joe, thanks so much. I want to thank the Hearst Corporation. I think I heard Katie Kiefer laughing back there. Thank Katie Kiefer for that sound effect. That was a live sound effect, everybody. And that's about it. So we will be back next week. Next week, our title, the theme of our show is giving. Giving. And we're going to have Anthony Butler, really a guy I respect, almost like I respect Abe Lincoln and you know, Atticus, you know, or Atticus, no, yeah, Atticus Finch, you know, from To Kill a Mockingbird. I know he's an imaginary character, you know, but a real stand-up guy. And he works at Bread and Life, which I was just giving some hams to the other day. And he's been on before, but it is right before before the new year and tax deduction time and this and that. So we're going to really make a push for giving both to his organization and to others like his. It's important that we don't forget that we should be volunteering, that we should be giving a little bit of our money, no matter how much or how little we make, to organizations like that. So we'll be back. It's going to be a great final week before the new year at HRN. So thanks for listening. Thanks for becoming a member. We too are a 501c3. And stay tuned for Straight No Chaser with Katie Kiefer.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.